Edition of the Dapped on Draft podcast, a Tuesday edition. And again, our content schedule is going to be changing a little bit down the stretch here because, one, typically on Tuesdays, we recap what happened in college football over the weekend. Well, guess what? There was the Army-Navy game, which we can spend a little bit of time talking about, but there's not a single NFL draft prospect. There is a Heisman vote in there, though. Three first-place Heisman votes in there, though, somehow, with Bryson Daly. But outside of that, you know, the Army man got... Didn't quite get his victory this weekend, but other than that, there wasn't any college football to talk about. So we are instead going to go over the list, the ever-growing list of declarees and returnees, and then kind of highlight the big ones, the surprises, and just kind of talk through some of the guys who've declared, some of the guys who've gone back to school. Before I do that, though, I will bring in Dalton Miller. Dalton, how are you?
I am fantastic. I am ready to talk about some of these declarations. A couple of surprising ones, maybe a couple of surprising returnees as well, which makes for a couple of interesting transfers as well. I'm going to only talk about one transfer probably, but that's mostly because it's more of a home story for me overall. But we are going to get into the declarations. And I think where I want to start is just talking about some of these running backs who have declared early for the NFL draft. Right now, Caleb Johnson, three-year junior, DJ Giddens, and Caleb Johnson, obviously Iowa running back, DJ Giddens, Kansas State running back. He's a four-year junior. Omarion Hampton, three-year junior from North Carolina, and then Ollie Gordon, a three-year junior from Oklahoma State. And the one that I really want to bring up, because I think Caleb Johnson and Omarion Hampton were no-brainers. Mm-hmm. And Ollie Gordon, with the hype that he had coming into the season, seems like a no-brainer. But when I watched him this year, I was... It wasn't even disappointment. It was sadness. Is the only way that I can really describe it, because it looks like the juice has been zapped out of him. He looked a little bit bigger this year, so maybe he got a little bit bigger. He wanted, you know, to maybe be able to take a little bit more punishment, maybe have a little bit more contact balance. But he did not look like his fluid, decisive, manipulative second level guy this year. It wasn't there for him. Obviously the offensive line wasn't as good. He was getting contacted quite early a lot more often, but he just didn't have the juice that we were used to seeing from him. So that was a little bit disappointing. And when you have those issues, I understand coming out early, because you're only going to take more hits at the college level. So, the big ones are Johnson and Hampton there, but no surprises.
No, I like DJ Giddens a bit too. Not much going on in the receiving game, both as a receiver or as a pass blocker right now. Yes. But he does have a very nice frame, though, that I could see a running backs coach saying, I can teach that kid how to get after it in pass pro. But again, not much as a receiver. He caught a Texas route in one of the games this year and took it 60 yards at the sideline. But he's not a guy you're going to isolate or try to target in the passing game very often. I really do like his eyes and patience, though. So I think he could be a pretty solid mid-round, early down running back in a committee somewhere, and, you know, maybe flirt with 1,000 yards down the line. But so I do like Giddens. But again, yeah, Caleb Johnson is the star of the show of the early declarees here. Again, Ashton Gentry's still playing football, so meaningful football, so he's not going to declare anytime soon until Boise State gets eliminated in the college football playoffs. But I think we're trending in a direction where Caleb Johnson's going to be the second running back off the board, potentially even a second running back in the first round. The dude is just so light on his feet, so decisive, such good eyes to find cutback lanes. I love watching that dude run the football. We've talked a lot about him. So I'm stoked for Caleb Johnson and would love for him to fall into the second round to my Cleveland Browns.
And there is really nothing to talk about at wide receiver. Tet McMillan and Luther Burden are in. That's pretty much it. That's all we have to talk about right now. We have a lot of wide receivers in the transfer portal, and we will definitely get to wherever they end up going, talk about their fits there a little bit, but that is for another episode. Tight end. We had one obvious one in Colson Loveland. and one that was a bit of a surprise in LSU tight end Mason Taylor. I have tried to finish his scouting report now for about a week. New names keep coming up, declarations and guys that I really wanted to get to. And I'm always like, oh, well, I'll get back to Mason Taylor. I'll get back to Mason Taylor. And I finally got to him today. And he was very much not what I expected going into the evaluation. I expected somebody, because I've seen him out of the peripheral, somebody who was going to compete as a blocker. Maybe wasn't the best in the world, but very competitive. He really took pride in that, because honestly, it's kind of what he does quite a bit at LSU. He's somebody who is used kind of as a flat receiver. He comes across the formation on their split zones quite a bit. But honestly, I came away incredibly impressed with his attitude and desire as a blocker. And then also his ability as a run blocker. He's incredibly intelligent. There are multiple instances that I cut up that I will share on Sky eventually of him making the correct decision on the line when either there's a late shift, a post-snap, slant by the line, or an offensive lineman makes the wrong decision, or a second tight end makes the wrong decision, and he makes up for it. He's able to slide through, get to the second level. He's got good length. His hands, his striking is very on target. He is going to be a guy. He might not be a devastating, dominating blocker at the next level, but I think that he's somebody who you're going to be able to hang your hat on as a guy who can do a little bit of everything at the position. I'm wondering how explosive and agile an athlete he is, but he is fluid. And so I do think that there's a little bit there as a route runner. Unfortunately, he's just not asked to do a lot as a route runner at LSU.
No, and that's what I was going to say. You were going to talk about the blocking side. And then I was thinking, like, I remember retarding Jaden Daniels. Like, all this dude does is just delay, leak out the flat, delay, leak out to the flat, catch passes in the flat, 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 flat. And then I watched a little bit of Nussmeier this year, and yeah, he's still doing a lot of that, but then like I will watch him run a really fluid corner route or a really fluid like dig. And I'm like, wait a second, this guy can actually move a little bit fluidly. Yeah. So I'm excited to get to that point where I dive into him again. We're working through our top 20 still. So I'm probably going to hold off until I can build my board out a little bit more with some of the more top tier players, but I'm excited to get to him because I think he has potential to be a top 50 guy on my board. Go top 64 in the NFL draft. So especially this tight end draft class is so much fun. Tight end class is so much fun. We could see a huge run on tight ends on day two. I really do think we could see that. So I'm excited to get around to Mason Taylor. Again, a lot of the big names. I'm surprised we haven't heard anything from Harold Fannin yet, whether or not he's going, whether or not he's entering the transfer portal. It's been kind of radio silence from Fannin so far, who's playing at Bowling Green, and they might have a bowl game. Maybe he wants to play in the bowl game and go after and decide after that. But and then obviously Gunnar Helm is still playing in the college football playoffs, and some of those other guys are, and so is Tyler Warren. So, and Colson Lovin's not, he already declared, so that's not a surprise to anybody. So, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to this tight end class. And when we get to the point where we are do our positional rankings to talk about this class as a whole, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I agree. Tackles. We have a bunch of them. Jonas Vaiinae, Will Campbell. Emory Jones was a bit of a surprise to us. We thought he was going to go back and maybe slide to the interior at LSU. Armand Membau, my guy, out of Missouri, three-year junior. And then Josh Simmons, a four-year junior, obviously had the knee injury, which was unfortunate, but he was playing some absolutely outrageous football for Ohio State before the injury. And then on the interior, we have two guys so far, Marcus Mbo, who we both believe should probably be a center at the next level, being projected as a guard. And then also a guard, DJ Wingfeld, who is technically a declaration because he still had a year of eligibility, but he's a five-year senior. And that was also for Purdue, and I haven't watched a single second of him. I'm going to be completely honest with you. And he's a five-year, so it's less of a thing. On the interior, I mean, do we want to talk about any of those guys? I feel like we've talked a lot about this tackle class overall.
We have. Yeah, I am not so much shocked by Simmons because he was getting first-round buzz, and I think he'll probably still go first-round even with the knee injury, which they never disclosed what the knee injury was. They just said he suffered a severe knee injury.
Yeah, I hate college injury stuff.
Yeah, they didn't say exactly what he did. So that's kind of a bummer that we don't really know. I mean, NFL teams will know, and we'll find out probably soon enough. But
yeah,
Emory Jones, I think, is the only one worth bringing up. You know, we've talked a lot about the other guys, but, you know, the intel that I had was that he was going to play guard at LSU next year. He was going to go back and they were going to kick him inside, and he was going to help his draft stock by actually kicking in before being projected to guard. Maybe him and Will Campbell had another conversation. Will was an obvious declaration. Like, Will was But yeah, I don't know what happened there. So that is interesting, because as much as we loved Emory Jones in summer scouting, he didn't take that leap. He didn't take that leap. Technically, he still got the physical tools, still has the core strength, the anchor strength to recover really, really well. I think he has the tools to play tackle, but if it hasn't synced up, you know, with his kick step to passing to quarterback step drop yet, and if he's still making some mental mistakes where he's forced to set wider than he is comfortable, then it's probably best to kick him inside the guard. And I do think he could be a really solid guard. And I think somebody might get a steal on him, like third round, but based off of how the step that he didn't take that I expected him to take, kind of disappointing there. But I think that's the only one that needs to be talked about a little bit right there.
Yeah. And on the defensive line, we all probably believe that Deion Walker was coming out and one of the best players in the class, Mason Graham. Jordan Phillips, a 3-year sophomore from Maryland, who I had never even heard of, a 3-year sophomore declaring for the NFL draft. That's somebody who I have to get eyes on, because anytime a sophomore, redshirt sophomore, 3-year sophomore, doesn't matter what it is declaring for the NFL draft, you have to pay attention to that, because that is either a really, really head-tilting decision, or this dude is some freak athlete who just wants to start getting an NFL paycheck early, and then you are banking on some of his upside. So interesting name there for sure.
Yeah. And he's on my short list now. Like there's some guys that just piqued my interest that I need to watch, and he's one of them. He looks like Bobby Brown coming out of Texas A&M. His body type and his alignment profile of playing predominantly one tech, three tech, pretty 50-50 split there. He looks like Bobby Brown, and he's got kind of the Bobby Brown alignment split as well. So Bobby Brown had a really nice anchor. I thought his motor was hot and cold at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. It kind of has been at the NFL level, but it seems like he's figuring out a little bit with Los Angeles now. So he feels a little Bobby Brownish. We'll see how you know, once I actually watch the tape, we'll come back. We'll talk about this guy.
Yeah, and then the edge rushers. I mean, we can't really talk much more about Nick Skorton or Shamar Stewart at this point. Obvious declarations. We thought maybe Skorton might go back because he's so young. We'd heard some rumors, but he ended up declaring he's going to be one of the youngest guys in the NFL draft. And then edge from Marshall, Mike Green, who has gotten a ton of hype, including first-round hype. I am not there with the first round hype, but I did go back and finish his evaluation, and I came away much more impressed with the overall than what I was from the Ohio State game. Virginia Tech was really, really good for him. And then the conference championship game was quite good as well. Obviously, I expect you to, if you're getting top 50 hype, to dominate against Louisiana Lafayette. And that is exactly what he did. And I do think that he is going to probably always struggle a little bit as a run defender. But what I did see in that Virginia Tech game, the Louisiana Lafayette game, is that he was disruptive as a run defender. His motor runs really, really hot, making plays from the backside, chasing guys down. And then he's got the end man. And honestly, I'm gonna let Corey get to his evaluation before we really get to start talking about the pass rush stuff. But the pass rush stuff is what you are getting the hype for from this guy. And I think top 50 might be a little rich for me personally, but definitely has some talent there as well.
Yeah. So I watched a couple of games coming into the year, and then I've been kind of keeping a peripheral. I watched the Ohio State game, obviously. I can get on board with like a top 75 hype. Even second round feels a little rich for my blood for Mike Green. And that's to say that I really like Mike Green. I really like Mike Green for the player he is, but like some of the point of attack stuff is still a little rough.
And this is a good edge class.
It's a deep class
with good size, and there's more DPR guys too. So like there's more guys like him as well. Mm-hmm. And it might not be exactly like him. But yeah, the first round hype for me is a lot.
It's a lot. Because like we're seeing guys like who I think are vastly more talented than Mike Green, but also had some point of attack issues, like Dallas Turner has kind of struggled at the NFL level. And that's a guy who was a top tier explosive athlete bend, like, and he struggled to kind of translate to the play strength of the NFL. So like we're talking about a first round pick there. I get that it's a weak draft class, but it is a good edge class.
Yeah.
So like is top 64 reasonable? Yeah, it's reasonable. I tend to think like top 75, top 85 would be the range that I would feel most comfortable for Mike Green going off the board. And we'll see some of that stuff. It's kind of roller coaster because he's going to go to the senior. Is he going to the senior bowl? I think he's going to the senior bowl. I'd have to double check on that. But I know he's a fourth year sophomore. So he technically has 4 years in college. So I think he's graduated to go. But I mean, people who go to those all-star events, they balloon up really, really high. People tend to overshoot the moon on, like, Roman Wilson was getting first round hype after the Senior Bowl last year. Like, we overshoot the moon on guys after the Senior Bowl, and then it comes back down to earth by the combine. So I'm sure we're going to see some over the moon projections for Mike Green because he has a skill set to win one on ones.
Yeah, he's the type of guy who's going to win one on ones while he's there for sure.
Yeah.
No real surprises from the cornerback group. Azaray Thomas might be a little bit of a surprise, but there was hype on him coming into the year a little bit. And then, I mean, Florida State's just an absolute disaster. So there's no point in him staying there. He might as well either declare or transfer. Mm-hmm. And I think that the tape's all right. He kind of reminds me of a Carlton Davis-type player where good frame, good body, a little bit stiff. How's that going to translate? I think he would be great. I mean, just throw him in Tampa Bay's defense, and I think that he is absolutely fine. But it will be interesting to see how his draft stock is, because I do know that there are people, including yourself, who really like his tape.
Yeah, I do like Azaray Thomas's tape. I agree with the kind of premise there, but to me, he's the kind of guy that you can set and press bail and he'll be okay. You can tell him to press man and he'll be okay. Even in some quarters coverages, he can turn and run. Like if that's what you're asking him to do, I think he's gonna be very okay with that. And so you can get into a little bit of sticky situations in quarters though if you're playing match and you have to flip your hips to, you know, things like that. It can get a little sticky short, but I do like Azaray Thomas. We'll see how much I like him added up to the rest of the class. But I do think he's a top 64 player in this draft class. Corners are, I mean, every position is fairly scheme dependent, but super scheme dependent. Yeah. But again, if he falls into a cover one, cover three scheme where he's just asked to either press man or press bail, then I think, you know, I mean, like Jim Schwartz, Cleveland defense is a good example of that as well. Like I think there are some schemes out there that could really utilize this guy.
Washington, Tampa Bay. The cover three is still the main.
Indianapolis.
Cover one and cover three still the main coverages in the NFL.
I say Indianapolis, but they might clean house. So Gus Bradley
might
not be there anymore. Anyway, so.
Yeah, we'll see. And then a safety declaration that I was shocked when I first heard it. And then I was very much not surprised when I really thought about it, because it is Penn State's Kevin Winston Jr. And he's a three-year junior, super talented, had a ton of hype coming into the year. Mm. And then he got hurt in the second game of the year and didn't play for the rest of the season. And I understand wanting to make the jump now, because if you have a second serious injury, that is probably all of your draft stock. And so I understand declaring if I am him because of that. Have you watched any of his tape?
I watched some over the summer, yeah. And I thought he was really explosive, has a really nice trigger. I would have liked to see some 2024 tape. would have liked to see some 2024 tape, but based off of his 2023 tape, man, I mean, Emin Worry's up there now. Like, Emin Worry bursted onto the scene. So, like, I still think he's safety three, safety four in this class. Like, you know, like his floor is maybe safety four. Like, I think I could like Makuba better because I love the way Makuba plays, but like Makuba's frame is also pretty small. So, you know, yeah. So like
Winston's funny, man, because Winston is kind of built to me like the way that he looks on the field. He's kind of got long limbs, so he looks leaner than like the 205 pounds that he's listed at. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he's ever missed a tackle, like ever. I don't know if he's ever missed it. He has. I think he missed two this year, but I don't think he missed a single tackle last year. And his arms are probably legitimately 33 inches. Like the dude has some pretty insane length, and he finishes everything. Even if he gets absolutely bullied by a running back on the outside, he'll get run over and he will somehow still grab a hold of Buddy's ankles and get him down. Like he is just a super solid tackler at the end of the day. And for me, I graded him. I really like Jahdae Barron too. And I think that he's a safety at the next level. So for me, he's below him, but he's right there with Makuba. And Makuba is somebody who I've really, really liked for years now. So for me, we're looking at like five or six safeties in this class that I really enjoy. And so you're looking at a class that at first it was like, like overall, just this class was meh. And it's still very high end and then a big gap for those first round talents. But there's a lot better depth in this class than I thought that there was going to be midway through the year even. And so for me, watching the tape from 2023 and watching, I watched every single snap he took this year because it was like 75. I'm ready to draft him on day two and not think twice about it as well. I do think that he needs to – I think instinctually it's not there for him right now. And that could just be because he's got like 500 college snaps. And so it's tough for me to grade him on the same curve as Makuba or Watts or Barron or – Starks, guys who have played a lot more football. But as a single high guy with the range that he has, and he is, if anything, a safe safety where he's going to maintain over the top leverage. He might not make a ton of plays on the ball, but he's going to be a safe guy. And then he also has that ability to come down into the alley and finish everything. And that is very valuable at the NFL level.
He had 21 stop tackles last year from free safety. That's a lot of stop tackles for a guy playing single high. That's a lot. And you were correct. He didn't miss zero tackles in 2023 with 21 stop tackles. So that's really good. He's got some slot versatility too to his game. So absolutely. At 6'2", 208 is impressive. At 6'2", 208 to do that as well is really impressive. So that's a healthy young man.
Yep. He can move a little bit. Now, let's talk about some of the returning guys.
Big one today.
Let's talk about the quarterbacks.
Two big ones.
Yeah. The big one earlier today was Drew Aller. I think that either decision would have made sense for him. I don't think that he could have really made a poor decision unless they get absolutely no older talent in the transfer pool at wide receiver on the outside. But Penn State's a running back and tight end factory. So they'll have dudes there that can help him out a little bit. Just get the man some talent on the outside, please. Yes. And let's see him make some NFL throws and go and grab QB1 next year.
Yes. That would be excellent. He's going to have stiffer competition for QB1 next year than he did this year too, which feels odd to say considering we've just talked about Shedeur Sanders a whole lot. And he probably would have been the third quarterback drafted this year, but I will continue to say that the 2026 class of quarterbacks, again, just a bunch of young dudes with just gassed up tools, man.
Yeah.
And again, are they there yet? No, but like 80% of them are first year starters. So like 80% of them are making first year starter mistakes. So like if Nico Yamalovalea, however you say his last name, takes a step, I mean, that's QB one. If Aiden Childs from Michigan State takes a step, like that kid's got tools out of his wazoo. Lenora Sellers. Kate Klubnik is a senior next year, but I would assume he's coming back too. But he's gassed up with tools too, and he took a huge stride. If he takes another huge stride next year, like, what's stopping him? He's a former five-star and the tools show. So, like, next year's class should be a fun one. It's going to be a chaotic one for summer scouting, though, because it's going to be all over the map. Mm-hmm. It's going to be all over the map. So it's going to be a lot of fun to sift through that quarterback class next year. But Aller certainly has that because he's got the A-plus arm talent. I'm still a little weary of the clumsiness in his lower half. Some of the accuracy concerns that came up in the Big Ten title game, I think he made the right decision. Yeah. Did somebody have drafted him in the first round? Maybe. Probably. But is he a kid that's who can go in there and play right away? No. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And especially if the going rate for quarterbacks right now at Power Four schools is $5 million. And he has the leverage to go back to Penn State and say, like, give me some more money. Like, you have some security right there. You have some security. So I think he made the right decision to go back to school, work on some of that stuff. Again, he's got a super creative offensive coordinator who schemed him up some giant windows to throw into as well. But yes, please push the ball down the field a little bit more, man. Just push the ball down the
field. Yeah. Who's the other one that you were thinking of?
Garrett Nussmeier.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a couple of days ago. But yes. So for me, the only thing I really want to bring up with Garrett Nussmeier when we talk about him and the potential for him being QB1, something that we don't talk about a lot is he is not very big.
Nope.
And this never gets brought up. But he's like 6'1", maybe 6'2", and maybe 200 pounds on a good day. Mm-hmm. And that is small. That is small. So that is really all I wanted to bring up with him. I feel like that is never a part of the conversation with him. The tools are there, obviously. There's some Romo to him. There's some Romo in him.
There is.
Because Romo didn't have a cannon. But
no, and Nussmeier doesn't either.
No, but I think Nussmeier has a good arm. He does. And I think
he's got some fun angles. He's got a flexible arm.
I think some of the stuff that he does on the move, on the run, I thought that his accuracy and consistency when on the move and throwing on the run was a lot better as the year went on. The post-snap rotation stuff is absolutely
killed him.
He's got to get there with that. So,
in his lower half, he's not very athletic. So, like, for Nussmeier, and this isn't a fair comp because we're talking about the best college football quarterback that we've seen in probably since Cam Newton to even say this out loud. But from a tools perspective, Burrow was more athletic than Nussmeier for sure. And Nussmeier's probably got a better arm than Burrow does. But from a capped out tools perspective, Nussmeier will need to play an almost perfect season like Burrow did to be considered as a top pick. And in my opinion, like the anticipation, the post-snap eyes, the pre-snap eyes, like Burrow had as perfect of a college football season as you could have as a college football quarterback from start to finish. And that's why he's a good NFL quarterback, despite the tools. Like, he's nails in the pocket. He's creative in the pocket as well.
So creative
in the pocket. And he throws with anticipation to make up for the arm talent. Like, if you're getting the ball out like 30 feet out in front of defensive backs, like, yeah, you're going to be okay. Like, you don't have to drill tight windows if you can anticipate the windows as well as Burrow can. So I think, not to say that he needs to be Joe Burrow, but like, again, I think his tools are relatively capped out where he needs to have cognitively an A-plus season to be considered. I would say even as a first-round pick, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Parker Brailsford surprised some people. But
it didn't surprise me.
He's a three-year sophomore. He's got two more years of eligibility, and he's sub-300.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people were surprised because he probably, could have been OC1. For a lot of people. I think it was OC1 for a lot of people, but that would have also, again, been ignoring the fact that he is sub 300 pounds and probably would have been pretty scheme dependent. But centers rarely ever go before the top 50 anyway, so it wouldn't have really mattered all that much.
I think Garrett Bradbury is the only one I can remember being sub 300 going in the first round.
And he was super athletic.
He was. And it took him 3 years to find his grounding in the NFL level, too.
Yep.
It took him a long time to find his footing.
Yep. But that's kind of the declaration update. I'm gonna just quickly hit on Bo Pribula. Please go to West Virginia, Bo. Please, I want to see you in Rich Rod's offense. I want to get the Pat White days back going. West Virginia was a lot of fun when they were good, because Morgantown, West Virginia is nothing. It is nothing but a party town, and I want the party to come back to that football team, because West Virginia, when they were good with Rich Rod, that was a lot of fun football happening. And the Big 12 could use some fun.
They could. People forget that that West Virginia team with Pat White and Steve Smith was a final week of the season choke job away from the national championship game. To Pitt. I mean, it sucks to lose to their rival. But they lost to Pitt in the last week of the season when they were the number two team in the nation. In the BCS, they would have. They're in the Natty. So, yeah, but man, Steve Slayton, one of my favorite college football players of all time. The dude is just lightning in a bottle. Like, yeah, unbelievable player. Throwback to when the Miami Dolphins drafted Pat White in the second round just because Ronnie Brown was walking in free agency and they needed a wildcat quarterback. But yeah, just a fun time in football. So, yeah, I'm all aboard Rich Rod. You know, maybe he couldn't have handled the heat of a massive blue blood program like Michigan, but he's proven that he's a great college football head coach, and I think Morgantown is the perfect full circle moment for him to come back to that program. So I'm hoping that would be so much fun.
Yep, but that's all we got for you guys today. We will be back tomorrow with an episode of Daft or Draft. We're gonna get our hot takes out there into the ether. We'll see how you guys feel about him. But until then, I am Dalton Miller. He is Corey Kinnon. Remember, guys, I love you. Goodbye.